and Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Neil Shulman, and we're going to talk about lots of things. We're going to talk about his book, Your Body's Red Light Warning Signals, what your body's symptoms can tell you about preventing and detecting disease. How are you, Dr. Shulman?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Thanks for coming on my show tonight. I appreciate it.
Delighted to come.
So there are a couple of things that I want to talk about before we get into the interview, and one of them is the One Path Summit that you're going to be doing with Suzanne Summers next month, I believe, here in Atlanta. And I just want to tell people that it's a unique opportunity for the public to integrate with the doctors and talk to them and ask questions about how they can create the future for their health care at an integrative level, and ask their questions and get to know who these people are and what their work is. Dr. Shulman will be there. It's going to be March 26th and 27th in Atlanta at the Cobb Galleria. So the other thing is Dr. Shulman's Health and Humanitarian Summit that's going to be here in Atlanta also the weekend of April 1st through 3rd at Emory University. And I'd like for Dr. Shulman to talk just a minute about those things before we get started and tell us a little bit about who he is and what he's doing.
Well, thank you very much. Who am I? My name's Neil Shulman, and I'm a physician. I went to Emory Medical School and am a professor at Emory. I did a lot of research in high blood pressure with the National Institute of Health, and I trained in nephrology, kidney. And then I got involved in a lot of book writing. And one of my books, there are fiction, nonfiction, and health books. One was turned into a movie called Doc Hollywood, starring Michael J. Fox, who was a delightful person. And that experience got me involved in television, doing spots called What's in a Doctor's Bag for Kids, and another movie I acted in called Who Knows, WHONOSE. So I've had sort of a gamish, a very wide spectrum of unrelated activities, but I right now am very excited because Emory University has been very supportive of a free global humanitarian summit that we have coming up April 1st, 2nd, and 3rd this year, 2011. And there's a website, imvc.org, I, Mary, M, V, Victor, C.org. And this is a global humanitarian summit to compete with the Global Economic Summit, where our priority is people who just want to make a difference, focus on doing things to keep people healthy, give them clean water, peace in the world, and everybody having a place to sleep. And anybody who wants to attend can go to the website, register. Anybody who wants to speak, everybody has an opportunity to speak. They can go to the website. And anybody who wants to exhibit, if they're a nonprofit, and everything's free. And we'd like people to copy us and do the same thing in other parts of the world.
I think it's fabulous. I really do. Thanks. Are you the orchestrator of all this, Neil? And Zoe, your wife?
Yeah, we started it, but I will say that none of this could have been done without a ton of volunteer organizers. So it's more of a movement with hundreds of people really helping young, old, from all parts of the world, all religions and all political parties, just coming together who are volunteering their time to make this all happen.
And I know that you are also, because I was at your meeting today, you're looking or allowing artists to come and musicians to come and the spoken word, people who speak, you know, use poetry or whatever writing, and that people can come and perform their whatever it is that their passion is. Is that right?
Absolutely. We wanted to.
Family event, right?
It's a family event, even a kid's corner. A guy from Korea who has a peace train is coming. Patch Adams, the real Patch Adams, is coming. He does clowning around the world for orphanages and Russia and all sorts of things. So it's all age groups, people from every walk of life, rich people, poor people. They're... might even be some sort of people wandering around who have money and want to anonymously find out what they have the most passion for and donate it to a cause.
All right. Well, you'll see me there, and I hope to see everybody else there. And if you have any questions or you want to participate and you don't know who to call, send me an email at evahur@gmail.com, and I'll get you connected.
And the website, again, is www.i.com. M as in Mary, V as in Victor, C.org, IMVC.org.
And I just want to say this too, the summit, it's onepathsummit.org, isn't it?
I could check that.
I'm sure
for
that's
you.
What it is. It's One Path Summit, OnePathSummit. You'll find it. One Path Summit in Atlanta. At the end of March. So now I'd like to get into your book because we got a lot of questions to ask you.
Yeah. Do you have, by the way, the exact date of the One Path Summit event, which is going to be a spectacular event with people looking at all different phases of medicine and ways of treating people, conventional as well as non-conventional, that make a difference?
I do. Let me just pull it up here. I said it one time, but I think then I forgot what it was after I said it.
I think it's, let's see.
I'll get it in just a moment. Here it is.
March 20, let's see, March 26th and 27th.
At the Cobb County Galleria. That's where it's going to be.
In Atlanta.
If you have any questions, email me. I'll send you information. So, now let's get to your book and the hundreds of questions that I have for you.
Okay.
All right, the first one, let's talk about headaches and aneurysms. What are the symptoms? Are there different types of aneurysms, and do the different types of aneurysms have different symptoms, like drooping eyelids or a terrible headache or heart aneurysms? What would their symptoms be?
Yeah, and a lot of this comes from this book we did, Your Body's Red Light Warning Signals. It's very... I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, too. I thought you... So I wanted to say, related to what Charlene said about the summits, both of the summits, you're in charge of your health. You need to be responsible for your health. You know your symptoms. You know how you feel. You know how, if any, minute changes. These are some things that will give you an idea to know if something's coming, so you can prevent something bad from happening or make it happen. If it's going to happen, make it less worse. So that's what these questions are going to be about with Dr. Shulman.
Yeah, and she said, you know, you discover the possibilities when traditional medicine and complementary medicine unite. And if the more you know, the more active you can play role in your health and wellness.
And though Dr. Shulman is a medical doctor, we are not diagnosing tonight. We are simply providing you with information. Do not do anything without talking to your physician. And do not make any changes in your medications without talking to your physician. This information is provided for just that purpose, information and knowledge. Just want to make that clear to protect all of it. Okay, back to the headaches and aneurysms.
Okay, so... And, you know, all these questions, I did want to say that there frequently the person who sees this stuff all the time are the experts, and we had about 150 of them in all different areas of medicine give us feedback. So this comes from a lot of different opinions from different experts. So let's get to the question. Aneurysm. First of all, an aneurysm is sort of when a blood vessel balloons out a little bit, and it can be very dangerous because it can burst. And it can happen in your brain. It can happen in the giant blood vessel coming off of your heart called the aorta that takes blood around your chest and then down into your abdomen. And any type of aneurysm can be very dangerous if particularly if it bursts. So the warning signs of an aneurysm, you know, if, for instance, it can vary depending on the situation that you're in, but an aneurysm, say that's bleeding in your head, just a little blood vessel outpouching and bleeding, you might get a very sudden, severe headache that just crashes in your brain like nothing you've ever experienced before and comes on very, very suddenly. And if that happens, it's not time to take an aspirin, go to bed, and try to let it wear off. You can have aneurysms, as I say, in other parts of your body, and they'll have different symptoms. For instance, you know, if it's in your chest, you might even be able to feel it. You might feel when you palpate your abdomen, put your hand on your belly, you might feel sort of a pumping of that aneurysm in your belly. Now, you can have aneurysms on other parts of your body too. For instance, sudden onset of seeing many spots before your eyes can be an urgent warning that you should seek medical attention. And it could be a condition in which you have this outpouching of blood vessels on the retina. That's the back part of the eye where vision's recorded and transmitted to the brain. And this is one of those big medical terms, retinal microaneurysm. And in a more advanced eye disease, for example, one caused by diabetes, new abnormal blood vessels grow and are at risk of rupturing. And if these rupture, the blood can flow inside the eye, causing sudden and severe loss of vision. So if you notice the onset of many spots in your field of vision, you need to contact an ophthalmologist right away, an eye doctor, since these symptoms may be associated with diabetes. Diabetics should have their eyes checked every year to find and treat any abnormal growth of the blood vessels and to prevent complications that cause these symptoms.
Okay. Next question I have is, and we can, once we get all these questions, we can go back and elaborate on anything you want to.
Sure.
To get to the main ones.
Oh, yeah. And that's why, you know, the answers can go on for quite some time, but I'll give you at least the thumbnail sketch, and then so they'll at least have some idea of these. These are really good questions.
Excellent. Thank you.
I'm going to give you an A.
Thank you. I'm honored. Okay, heart attack, warning signs. And also, I know that's I'm just going to ask you the whole question, and then you can answer how you want to. I know that that people have pain in their chest and their arms and their shoulders and their jaw. One thing I've always wanted to know is the pain on the top of the arms or underneath the arms? And is there a role with hypoglycemia in heart attacks at all? That's the next question.
Okay, so your first question is the arms. Well, let me just start off by saying your blood vessel has three straws on its surface. And if you get something the size of a pea stuck in one of those straws, then the area that that straw provides nourishment to with blood to that area of the heart, so that area of the heart gets oxygen and food, can die. And that's a heart attack, when part of the heart dies because of these peas stuck in the straws. And there are lots of different presentations. You can even have painless heart attacks, particularly people who are older people are more likely to have a painless heart attack than somebody who's not. You may experience any or a combination of a very weak feeling, sudden dizziness, a feeling that your heart is pounding, shortness of breath, or a heavy sweat. You may have a feeling of impending doom, nausea and vomiting you also frequently have with that type of situation where you don't have the pain. And the heart attack can occur, as I say again, without any pain. Now, the typical is pain in the chest, and it can be run down your arm, and you can even have what's called angina, where you haven't had death of the heart tissue itself yet, but that pea that's stuck in the straw is not maybe a really big pea and there's still some blood that flows through it, the straw, or the coronary artery, we call it, and therefore you do get some nutrition to the heart, but less than you need. So therefore, when you walk, you might get chest pain. When you're shaving, you might get pain in your arms.
Is it on top or underneath the arms?
What's usually sort of the arm itself, so you'd feel it within the arm. It's not like on the skin. It's more within the...
Oh, within, on the inside of the arm.
Yeah, you'd have that pain usually.
Gotcha.
And it wouldn't be like, you know, like if you had a rash or something on your skin where it might be painful.
Is it like a muscle spasm kind of pain?
You could say it sort of would have that type of feel to it.
Okay. All right. My next question.
But again, it's going to be different with different people, you know. So I don't want to, you know, don't say, well, it's this way or that way. And, you know, you shouldn't get it, you know, get it checked out because different people respond differently. And some people, for instance, blow it off as nothing, and other people will run to the doctor when it's just anxiety. So it can go, and sometimes it's just discomfort, you know. It can be under the breastbone after a vomiting episode. Well, the, you know, there's a lot of, as I say, nausea and vomiting. Under the breastbone, but nausea and vomiting can also come in.
Okay. The next question is, and I would ask you things that we could do about these things, but because we have so many questions, we're just going to focus on symptoms, if that's okay with you.
Sure. And the main point is that people just need to, they're sort of 911 symptoms. You don't want to hang
right.
around. It's better to let a doctor check it out and make sure it's not something urgent.
The next one I would like to ask about is diabetes, and I'm going to say hypoglycemia too because they're kind of, you know, kin to each other. But what are the warning symptoms? Because it's kind of like a silent disease, you know. What are the warning symptoms that we can watch out early on to maybe catch this so that we don't have to have it?
Yeah, good question. With things like diabetes, and this, you know, first of all, diabetes is when, you know, you frequently have too much blood, sugar in your blood. And if there's too much sugar in your blood, you can be at a greater chance of having a heart attack and having kidney problems and having even problems with other parts of your body where you don't get enough blood flow through the blood vessels. The presentations can come in a lot of different ways. If your blood sugar's real high and you have acid in your blood from your diabetes as well, you might have what we call fruity smelling breath. And sometimes that's confused because somebody might be a little confused and somebody thinks they are drunk, but they're not drunk. It can be a diabetes is a condition that's caused by abnormally high blood sugars, and you usually get it when you have low levels of insulin, the hormone that's produced in the pancreas. And the earliest signs of diabetes usually include frequent urination and unquenchable thirst. And also, diabetics often lose weight rapidly, within days or weeks. So the insulin drives the sugar from the blood into your body's cells, so you get nourishment. And untreated diabetes, the body no longer burns the sugar as its normal source of energy, and instead it burns fat. And when this happens, acid compounds are produced as byproducts, causing the blood to become very acidic.
And
now, you can lose some of this acid through the lungs, producing this fruity-smelling breath.
Do you smell, can you yourself tell that your breath smells that way, or is it more recognizable by other people?
Frequently another person, but I guess if you put your hands, that's a good question, if you put your hands over your nose and mouth, you'd probably particularly be able to recognize it. It then depends probably on how aware you are of your body and what's going on with it. Some people are not very aware of their body at all.
Yeah.
And others are very, very, very aware of what's going on in the body. Diabetic rarely detects the strange smelling breath odor, but it could happen. It's important that, you know, if you notice this in somebody else, you tell them right away. And it's usually something you've never smelt before, and it's just an unusual smell. And unfortunately, since the acid in the person's blood can make them act like they're intoxicated, the smell may be mistaken for alcohol, causing the person to be misdiagnosed.
I didn't know that. Now, imagine, too, that if you have blood sugar problems, that you will have funny drops in energy, faintness and dizziness and things like that, right? Possibly.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Absolutely.
The next question is your field of expertise, which is high blood pressure, atrial fibrillations. What are the symptoms of high blood pressure? Because it's one of another one of those silent things. We don't have a tumor growing out. It's a silent thing. How do we know it?
Okay.
Isn't that right? Isn't that your field of expertise?
Well, it's an area I did a lot of research in at one time.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. And as you said, it's frequently a silent killer, so to speak. And what we mean by that is, and it's also, by the way, called hypertension as well as high blood pressure. And when we say it's a silent killer, we mean that you might feel fine and have very high blood pressure. And then you could have a stroke, have a heart attack, kidney failure. So the best way is to monitor your blood pressure if you are somebody who's had a family member who's had heart disease, kidney disease, high blood pressure, then you might have a greater likelihood of having it. Also, eating a lot of salt for some people who are sensitive can contribute. And I think the best way is to actually monitor your blood pressure regularly. We had a program where we were teaching fifth graders to take high blood pressure, and they went home and took their parents' blood pressure. It's not hard, and at different times of the day, it's different levels. So, you know, it's not a bad idea to, when you see your doctor, give them a few different values. Sometimes your blood pressure goes up when you're in the doctor's office just because you're a little nervous. And, you know, so it wouldn't hurt to check your blood pressure. And you can always go by often a fire department and get your blood pressure checked, or hospitals that have community screening programs. And these blood pressure cuffs are not expensive.
Yeah, I'd like to say something here. I check my blood pressure because I have had high blood pressure before, and I've noticed that I personally, and I'm not a doctor, but I still recommend that you go by somebody like a fire department that has a real blood pressure cuff, because those machines that they have at the drugstore or the grocery store, sometimes I find they're up to 20 points off. So you don't really know what you're getting. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. It, you know, doesn't hurt, but it's, you can't, you know, go with some absolute and say, you know, this was taken. And
your
so
fire department does it for free.
Pardon?
The fire department will do it for free. Just stop by there and they'll do it for you.
Yeah.
And it's accurate. You know, it's a real blood pressure cuff.
Yeah. And actually, all healthy individuals over 21 years of age should be screened regularly, at least every 2 years, for high blood pressure.
Especially if you have a little fat on you, too, the way so many of our...
Oh, yeah, and children who are obese, it's never too early to check their blood pressure.
Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about this, you know, potassium, magnesium, and calcium levels play a role in high blood pressure. How do you know, if you're just the individual at home, which one is off? Does potassium have particular symptoms? Does magnesium have different symptoms? Does, you know, calcium have different symptoms? How do you know? Or do you know?
Well, I should say this, first of all. There are certain symptoms that you might have with, say, high calcium or low calcium or high potassium, low potassium, and so forth. But, the problem is they are so variable and there's so many other things that can cause them that it's hard to say, well, this one particular symptom is, you know, due to this without checking the blood. Hyperparathyroidism, for instance, is a condition that can cause differences in the mineral contents in the blood, and this, as one example, can be an example. But let me try to be very specific here. For instance, severe constipation, dehydrated, muscle weakness, bone pain, loss of memory, confusion, depression, psychosis, where you lose contact with reality, anxiety, heart rhythm abnormalities, kidney stones, may all indicate hyper or an overactive parathyroid gland. Now, these glands are in your neck area. There also could be general symptoms such as increased thirst, urination, nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite, or abdominal pain. So you can see that these glands and the parathyroid gland are located in the front base of the neck near the thyroid. And they actually produce a hormone that controls the amount of calcium in your blood.
What is that hormone, do you know?
The hormone in your blood that's secreted by the parathyroid gland is, the parathyroid hormone.
I ask because it gives me more. I like to know all the things about everything. So when we get off the phone, that'll be one thing that I'll add to my research list that I want to know about.
Okay.
But,
a very high level, by the way, of calcium in the blood increases the risk of developing, all these symptoms that I just told you about.
Okay.
It can also cause, by the way, a loss of calcium from the bones, and that results in softening of the bones and thus bone pain.
Okay.
The life-threatening consequences of high calcium include abnormal heart rhythms and severe dehydration. Usually, if you remove the diseased parathyroid gland, it's curative.
Okay.
You can't. Tumors of the parathyroid gland are rarely large enough to be felt by examining the neck. So you have to rely on appropriate blood studies to indicate that they're there. Now, that's just calcium. You were asking about
potassium.
Yeah. And hypokalemia and hyperkalemia are examples. Those are the terms for low potassium or high potassium. Let me give you an example. I had a patient once who, he wasn't even my patient. I was just in the hospital room, and this guy calls over to me. He says, "Doc, can you come over here?" I said, "Sure." He said, "I came in here, and I was feeling pretty good, and now I can't move my arms and I can't move my legs, and I'm paralyzed. And he said, you know, I can still breathe. And I said, uh-oh. So I checked his reflexes, and they were, you know, you take that little hammer and knock on his knee, and it jerks real rapidly. Say, oh, my goodness. And I got an EKG, a heart, you know, test. And I was on the electrocardiogram able to see that he had findings that suggested his potassium was way too high. But I didn't have time to draw his blood because he could die from a heart rhythm abnormality. So we immediately started treating him. We drew his blood, but we started treating him before we even got the blood results back.
So let me make sure I understand. When you have a really rapid reflex or substantial reflex, that's an indication of too much potassium. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's there are other things that can cause
rapid
reflex.
Or could be an implication.
But that documents that could be what's happening. The EKG was the...
That's interesting.
Was the real key. But that's when you have hyperreflexia. So it's... But the big thing was that as soon as we gave him actually sugar and insulin to drive the potassium into his cells from the blood, and immediately gave him other medication to get rid of the potassium. And within a few minutes, he was moving his arms and legs. And he said, oh, thanks, Doc. But thank goodness he told us about it, because if it had caused his heart to start quivering and have abnormal rhythm, it could be deadly.
So my next question is something for men. Let's talk about how do you know, and we're not. I don't necessarily mean prostate cancer or testicular cancer. How do you know if something is starting in your prostate or your testicles?
Yeah. First of all, sometimes you don't know. And by the way, I know we don't have time to go through all of them. I didn't go through all of the issues you were asking me about relating to potassium and calcium and, you know, low and high, because they're different. But people can also, in this book, Your Body's Red Light Warning Signals, they can
talk about them if you want to. Use this time however you think's most important.
Well, I think the other question you asked me was important too, but let me just say this maybe about potassium. It's important to have the right level of potassium in your blood. Both low and high potassium levels can make you feel very weak and cause muscle cramps. And either one, too much potassium or too little, can lead to a fatal heart rhythm problem. And potassium is generally, you know, a mineral that you find in a variety of all sorts of foods, like bananas, tomatoes, orange juice. And you usually get enough of the potassium you need from the foods you eat. And it moves in and out of the muscle cells, and it creates electrical currents that make your muscles move. And this is true for all the muscles in your body, including those in your arms, your leg, your torso. Now, low potassium levels in your body can cause profound muscle weakness, spasms, and cramps. And, of course, the heart is the most important muscle that depends on potassium. And if it gets too low or too high, then you can get these electrical currents, which will travel throughout the heart, and the sudden discharge of these abnormal currents can cause the heart to pump irregularly, which can lead to sustained heart spasm, so that the heart's not pumping blood through your body, and it's just spasming, and therefore it could cause death. You can lose potassium when you're vomiting or having diarrhea, and usually it's replaced with foods, beverages, but long periods of vomiting and diarrhea can result in dangerously low potassium, which can be checked with a simple blood test. And then you can take potassium pills or liquids that may be necessary to avoid the life-threatening abnormal heart rhythms. High blood pressure can be associated with low potassium levels. Most water pills, we call them diuretics, are used to treat high blood pressure, swelling, and heart failure, and they can cause you to lose potassium in your urine. If you're taking a diuretic for any reason, you should have your blood potassium levels checked by your doctor on a regular basis. And depending on the level, it's important for you to take supplemental potassium pills or liquids. Another cause, by the way, of profound potassium loss can be an overactive adrenal gland. Now, that's the gland that sits on top of your kidney. And this can cause high blood pressure. And there you need special medications or surgical removal of the gland. Or, on the other hand, very high potassiums can cause heart pumping irregularities as well. And they're associated with certain medications. There's a drug called ACE inhibitors for high blood pressure, and that can cause this.
High potassium?
Yeah.
Okay.
That can cause high potassium. And they can be caused by kidney disease, high potassium. And you shouldn't take extra potassium pills without having your blood potassium monitored by your doctor. So, the bottom line of all this is if you experience muscle weakness, cramps, especially after diarrhea, or you're vomiting, taking water pills, taking potassium supplements, or taking the category of blood pressure pills called ACE inhibitors, and if you have a history of kidney disease, you should tell your doctor so your doctor can monitor your potassium level. And, of course, there are many other causes for muscle cramps. It's not just potassium.
Okay. That was interesting.
It's interesting. I know it's a lot to learn at once, but I really feel, when I worked in emergency rooms, it was always disappointing to me when I saw somebody come in with a problem and they came in too late. Or sometimes a doctor's busy and they miss something, and if the patient just says, well, doc, are you sure it's not this or that? That can help us. So you can help us, by being aware of these.
Okay, can you talk about prostate and testicular issues? Because, so many men they get it when they're 70, okay? We all know that. Just about every man has some kind of prostate issue going on. So what can they do to figure it out early? Even though it's slow, it kills a lot of them, and they could prevent it if they knew what.
Exactly. Well, first of all, I want to say that men, if you have a family member who had prostate cancer, or if you are African American, then your chances of having prostate cancer are much greater. So most men do get prostate cancer as they get older, but they don't die from it, you know. And so it's sort of different depending on, you know, the individual patients. You know, if you, let's talk about some other symptoms, you know, if you have, say, a red light warning signal of low belly pain, low back pain, problems with urinating, such as slowing of your urine, increased frequency of feeling of urgency to urinate, pain on urination, they could be a whole group of things. They could be infections of the urinary tract are important to recognize early because they can cause serious kidney disease if left untreated. But they can be a sign of prostatitis, that is sort of an infection, irritation of the prostate, or rarely prostate cancer. It's usually not prostate cancer, but it can be. There's, you know, they recommend that you get a test called a PSA. And that can potentially, it's a prostate-specific antigen, and if that is high, it can indicate that you have prostate cancer, but it might not be prostate cancer. It could be, say, just chronic prostatitis, where it's just an inflammation of your prostate gland. So in those cases, you have to get a biopsy, and you know, actually, in most cases, you won't have any symptoms in the early stages. But it can become advanced before it's detected. So that's why this PSA or prostate-specific antigen blood test helps in early detection. And I'd say all men age 50 and older, or 40 and older for African-Americans, or anybody with a first-degree relative with a history of prostate cancer should receive a PSA test and a digital rectal exam annually. That is, you know, with the doctor just feeling your prostate gland as well, because they can sometimes pick up things that are suspicious that way.
I'd imagine while we're at this area that you might would probably recommend colon exams too for a certain age person, and why would that be?
Yeah. Very good. Colon cancer is another problem.
We have about 8 minutes left, by the way.
Oh. Yeah, colon cancer we won't talk about too much, but I would like to say that, again, it's a very common cause of cancer and type of cancer. And again, picking it up early can make all the difference in the world as far as saving somebody's life. And sometimes the earliest finding is just some blood in your stools, and it could be in your stools. You could have blood in your stools that are from that you can't see. In other words, they do a special little test and put the blood on a, you know, on a little strip, and they can see it change color, and that can suggest that you have colon cancer. But usually it won't grow real fast, but if you check for colon cancer on a regular basis, then you might be able to pick it up early, and therefore, you know, some people, it's very highly recommended that they go and get a colonoscopy to just check it and see what's going on and if they can see the cancer. Again, it's a common cancer. It's a cancer that can be picked up early. And picking it up early with the colonoscopy can make a big difference. You can also have change in your bowel habits.
All right, one more question that we can get to maybe before. We've got about three or four minutes. And something that can be obvious is changes in your nails. You know, club fingers and dark spots on the fingernails. And I'm assuming that the infection that you're talking about with the red dark spots is a Helicobacter, is that right? Or whoever wrote that article in your book.
Yeah, I wanted to say one other thing.
Okay.
If I could, just real quickly. That this was just with the GI tract. You know, many doctors actually recommend that if you have a family history of colon cancer, you should get screened 10 years earlier than normal. For example, if your mother was diagnosed at age 40, you should start getting screened at age 30. So I did want to make that one point.
That's an important one.
Yeah. Now, you're asking about fingernails?
Yes.
And?
Well, club fingers, and it also, that chapter in your book talked about little red streaks in your fingernails, and I'm assuming it talks about it could indicate a heart infection, and I was, because it talked about dental disease, so it made me think maybe the guy was talking about Helicobacter, and I just had to tell you this, even though I said we weren't going to talk about things that treat things. One of my friends, Norm Sheely, told me that if you had Helicobacter, that if you were something in Pepto-Bismol would cure it, or kill it, or whatever the appropriate word is, that you would take 3 Pepto-Bismols a day for 5 days, and your tongue would turn black in the meantime, just that it's okay for only 5 days, and then it would get rid of that Helicobacter. And I thought, man, that's something that everybody needs to know if that really works. But Norm's an MD and a PhD. He's a neurosurgeon. So I figured he must know. He must know the truth because he treats his patients with it. So I just thought that was an interesting thing to know.
And he treats them with what? Again, I'm sorry.
Pepto-Bismol pills. Something in the Pepto-Bismol kills that bacteria or virus or whatever it is.
Yeah, that I wasn't familiar with. That's interesting.
I thought it was, too.
Well, with fingernails, splinter-like red dark spots in the fingernails can be a sign of an infection in your heart. Just splinter-like hemorrhages.
Interesting.
And these, as these tiny little vessels become clogged, they damage the wall and it begins to leak blood into the surrounding tissues, forming these little reddish dark spots. And since they're not painful, you might not even notice them. But if it's an infected heart valve, and you even have just slight weakness or weight loss, intermittent fevers or chill, tiredness, joint pains, those are sort of general symptoms. But you see this in your fingernails, and you want to be particularly cautious about that issue. Now, germs commonly gain entrance into the blood when you're getting ordinary dental work, and it could infect heart valves that have been damaged in the past. So, you know, this is one nail finding. Now, the other is if you have enlargement of the fingertips, such they become wider and the nails become deformed, and they look like sort of like a club-like appearance. And that can be a very important consideration of diseases that impair oxygenation of the blood. Certain heart diseases, as well as lung, liver, and bowel, serious diseases, including cancer, can be associated with these deformities in the tips of the fingernail.
Really?
Yeah.
Never heard of that. That's interesting.
So just looking at your little fingernails can tell you a lot, and doesn't hurt to do that. Now,
all
you
right.
can have fungus of the nails, and that's merely unsightly, but certain medications used to treat it can have serious side effects, including liver problems.
Interesting.
So you want to be careful about using those drugs because of the potential problems with the drugs causing those liver problems.
Okay, Dr. Shulman, we got to wrap it up. Thank you for coming on. Tell us one more time where we can find this book.
The title is Your Body's Red Light Warning Signals. It's just an $8 book that you can get at Amazon. You can go to redlightwarningsignals.com. You can should be able to order it through bookstores, Barnes & Noble, and any general website that has books. They even have it in China, Korea, Vietnam, Croatia, if you speak any of those languages.
It's a great book. I mean, it's a great handbook for, you know, and warning signals. And I'd also like to say for y'all, my listeners tonight, if you have Facebook and you're interested in either one of the One Path Summit or Dr. Shulman's Health and Humanitarian Summit, I'm constantly posting on my Facebook about it, or you can send me an email at evahur@gmail.com. So have a good evening. Thanks for taking your time, Dr. Shulman, to come on my show.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Consciousness and health.
Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.